The Grade Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined by Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. Hello, boys.
Great to be with you, Higgos and Hezza.
Great to be back.
Yeah, welcome
back.
I
was pretty fucking forgotten yesterday, to be honest.
It's been a while since we had a brash opening. It's a brash opening, and that's why you can see the E for explicit next podcast. It's been a while since we've all been together. I'll start by caveating that we can also hear the humming. It's because we're in Cricket New South Wales offices at the SCG, and it's in an air-conditioned room, and we're not in our usual recording studio. That's why you can hear some light
humming.
We've
seen your tweets. We acknowledge there is a problem. We're going to press on with it, but we apologise profusely.
Positively spin it. I mean, it's a little bit of ambience to it all. I know it's of no benefit to the listeners, but we are sitting in a boardroom full of paraphernalia that is far more important than anything we'll ever achieve. Like, there's a Sheffield Shield in here.
Yeah.
There's Rick McCosker's hat from 1984. There's all sorts of...
Do you remember when Brendan Julian asked us if we've ever lifted the Sheffield Shield because it's really heavy?
Yeah.
Like, why would I have done that, mate? Yeah. No, I'm doing a stupid podcast with two blokes I hate.
I carry them every day.
Yeah.
But we're going to, it's a special show in a sense, but it's got a literary bent to it. We're going to have Jeff Lemon on the show later to analyse club songs.
Yeah.
Because that's what you guys have been asking for. Club songs mean a lot. It's a very deep ritual in cricket. We all sing them.
Yeah.
But very rarely do we actually think about what the words mean. So we've got two clubs whose songs we're going to analyse with the literary voice of our generation. Jeff Lemon. Let's talk about the cricket quickly.
Day two, Pez.
Yeah, we're approaching afternoon tea as we record. Yep. Pakistan at 2 for nothing. Australia made a million runs.
We made a million. Yep.
The two main things out of today, as this match just lumbers to its inevitable conclusion, some sort of victory on late day three.
Yeah.
Early day four.
Yeah.
I was going to say it. That's unwise. Pete Hanscom made 100 and he was out, hit wicket. Two things that I guess we could both have predicted. And Hilton Cartwright debuted and made a kind of tantalising 37. It was a 37 that promised much more. His first ball for four, he looked like a kind of a strong front dog ball machine automaton that is perfectly suited to a wicket like the SCG. Let's talk about Cartwright. There was lots of conjecture over his selection.
Well,
what did you make of the innings?
Well, it was 37, and I've never seen a 37 I didn't like or want desperately. look, he looked pretty good on what did seem a pretty docile pitch against a pretty even more docile attack. Their hearts certainly weren't in it, the Pakistanis. But he did look good. Is it enough to get on the plane to India? We talk a lot about the plane to India. I might need to take two planes to India, the amount of people that have been tapped for it. But I guess that's going to be the real talking point for mine and the country about Hilton Cartwright. Is this 37 enough to go to India?
Yeah.
Didn't he really look like... I mean, you just used the word looked good.
Yeah.
To me, that was the thing I took away from it. Like, he looks like an Australian cricketer who is made to look good. He looks like the prototype Australian cricketer. It's chest, it's biceps, it's straight lines.
His elbow's high, the ball comes down and comes off the bat really fast at good angles.
Mm.
And he's very strong through the V, which is, you know, any self-respecting Australian should be good at.
Hilton Cartwright, I've got nothing against Hilton Cartwright. He may very well follow the account. He may be a fan of ours, and he may play 315 test matches.
You wish him well, Bernard Fanning.
I wish him well, but if I was ever going to bat in a scenario in my debut test, I would have batted today.
Yeah.
The wicket was flat AF. Bowling was disinterested. The fielding was awful. And it was just a lovely setting. Sun was out. And it looked easy. I guess he made it look as easy as he would have liked. It would be his riposte, and rightfully so. But it just looked so easy. So I found it really difficult to tell if he is ready to bat six for Australia in a test match, even though he literally did that thing this morning at the SCG in front of all the
guys. Look what happened with Maddison. He went out, you know, under lights on his debut.
Right.
Out. Well, I think he got... a duck off 12 balls, looked all at sea, and all at sea ever since. Still at sea. somewhere in international waters.
Life
imagine if he came in on this setting and hit 100, and would be talking about him for India, and would his tests career take a different trajectory. It's really just being in the right place at the right time now.
Yeah, timing is everything.
Callum Ferguson would have killed 15 people and probably his own mother to bat today in his debut innings instead of that Hobart on a seeming wicket against
five against
Abbott and Rabada. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, you got run out, I suppose. So you could really play the wicket, but.
So we figured like rather than every single person's going to have a take on the cricket, we're actually in the press box. It's just full of takes. And I guess before we get into what's happening in the press box, how often do you think someone in the press box is going to say about Hilton Cartwright, well, you can only play what's in front of you.
There's literally an echo reverberating the press box here at the SCG. Yeah. The amount of people who have said that, and you've just added to that echo.
It 37, just as a score, 3-7, is like Hilton Cartwright was brought into the team on that word promise. It is the most promising score, I would venture, of any score you could make. Put any number together in cricket, 37 is the one that makes people go, that whets the appetite.
You can round it up to anything.
Yeah.
Like, not even just 40. Yeah. 37 is anything.
Yeah. I actually don't like 37 because my OCD is at 13 from 50, the same way that 87 is an unlucky score in Australian cricket because it's 13 from
100. I never put that connection together.
But I was never good enough to make hundreds consistently, so 37 was as good as it got for me.
I like it because it's a big 30.
Yeah, it's a daddy 30. Yeah.
Yeah.
but it's also 40-odd.
Yeah, exactly. So it's
anything you want it to be, isn't
it? It's the perfect score.
How many did Hilton Cartwright get? He was 40-odd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
40-odd.
Or a daddy 30, yeah.
daddy
It's like a stepdad.
Yeah. That's right.
But we saw some things in the press box.
Well, we figured rather than go through the take of the game, why don't we try? We're not elites of the press box. In fact, the main feeling towards us in there is that you guys are new media people who
threaten us.
Everyone actually sitting at lunch, people started taking chairs away from our table to sit amongst each other.
Gus Wallman took four chairs from our table.
Yeah,
these used only them for HG.
Yeah,
Jules, all the boys. No girls.
Yeah, but when you go to the press box, like most people say, there's a big separation between like the Channel 9 guys, the radio guys, the print journos. And now we're a new entrant. We're the media, new media people, the social media people. Nobody's talking to us.
We literally sat at lunch on our phones tweeting. That's what we did. Whilst Gus Wallen gathered his friends around it. So Gus Wallen has more friends than us.
Yeah.
Is the situation.
Yeah.
In this current state of Australian cricket.
That's right. Well, look. Anyway, but we thought we might try and take you into the press box anyway and pretend we're elite, as it were. We've seen a couple of things that you wouldn't ordinarily see on TV.
No.
So I guess just to kick things off, we're getting coffee today, and everyone else was getting a coffee too. There was a cappuccino order, there was a latte, Slats was there, Pidge was there, and I say Pidge, I've never met him before, I was in a lift
and
with him.
Slats.
Yeah, and Slats, and there was Brett Lee asking for a protein shake.
Yeah, well, he had his own protein shake, he brought his own shaker, and he boldly just went up to the barista and just grabbed the skim milk, obviously skim milk.
Just poured it in, all of it.
He poured it in and just
$3
like,
a litre.
Yeah, and just smiled at everyone. Yeah. It was $1 million smile.
Yeah. Like, he looked wonderful.
He looks good.
How many Weet-Bix were in the protein shake?
That's right.
I was scared to ask because obviously, Channel 9.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing we saw.
Yeah.
The big takeaway for me today.
Yeah, you have one big takeaway.
Big takeaway for me today was we all watched Peter Hanscom at the back of the press box score his 100th run today that he scored.
And just to set it up, we were sort of obscured by people, so you correctly moved to a spot where you could get a really good view with the express purpose of watching Hanscom score his 100th run. We followed suit, so we stood next to you.
I still feel like we're still like salt of the earth guys, that we still enjoy like that moment. Because like you're watching someone, like your dream, someone else achieve your dream.
Yeah.
And I had to watch that because I wanted to watch it myself.
Yes.
And so Hanscom turned one to mid-wicket region, scampered through for a single, and I looked to my right, and Ian Chappell's there. Literally a metre in front of me. To my right hand side, I looked over Ian Chappell, not even watching the game, was reading about the Orioles pitching rotation in the Major League Baseball. That's what he was reading up on before he went back to air for his various media commitments.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought.
Well, obviously,
Ian Chappell hates cricket.
So he's good in our books. Obviously, our careers in the media box will last long as we spend every podcast laying dirt on everyone who's in there privately.
But I think it's good to humanize Ian Chappell. He's not a cricket nuffy. You know, he's interested in what's happening, in an offshore domestic baseball league.
I think it's to his
pitching
credit.
Pitching rotations are important.
Well, I heard yesterday, you guys were obviously at the ground yesterday, I was in Melbourne, but he was commentating and it was awesome. While everyone else is talking about Sophie Pidge and Slats and all the stories from the 90s, Ian Chappell was giving us a bit of a masterclass on Alan Kippax's late cut. And I was like, I found that really classy. So I'm a Chappelli
detail.
Convert.
He's a detail.
I'm a big Chappelli guy.
Peter Hanscom could have learned a lesson from that. He literally played that late cut today behind the stumps, what you wouldn't give to score 100 at the SCG and then just go, I'm seeing too well, I'm just going to kick my stumps over.
Yeah, brilliant.
New dream, new dream.
Yeah.
Do you think hit wicket is the best way to get out, the most alpha way to get out, because you're just getting yourself, you're just truly getting
the
yourself
that you fear the most.
Yeah. You've actually reminded me of something. Someone tweeted it to us. It was a screenshot of the My Cricket mode of dismissal across all My Cricket stats for the year.
Yeah.
And 100 people in the country this year have been timed out. This year, I say 2016, the last 12 months.
Yes.
Have been timed out. 100 people have been timed out.
How many suicides have there been this year?
Yeah. There's a book on that. There actually is a book on that. Suicide isn't funny, but I think on the timeout question, let's use the power of social media. If you're one of those 100 people and you listen to the Great Cricketer podcast, and let's face it, you play part cricket.
What's the story? How did you get timed out? Did you just not get your pads on in time, or were you off at 7-Eleven getting tea? How did we need to know the scenario?
It wasn't
circumstances.
A dream.
See, in Great Cricket, in proper cricket, not like any Nuffy's played, but Nuffy's been the listener,
Let's ostracise our listeners and the press.
Yeah, exactly.
Very good.
Yeah, I don't have any friends anyway.
Yeah.
In great cricket, you always think the conversation always is, I'm trying to get to the point, is that you always ask, has anyone ever been timed out? That's always the question when the next batsman is waiting 5 minutes to come in. But no one ever appeals, because that's when it's almost taboo to appeal for a timed out situation. But, how bad must it actually be for this opposing side to actually appeal for timed out? How long has it actually got to be?
Imagine going up in unison on Cricket 96. Umpire giving it.
There's always someone that goes, he's out, isn't he? He's got to be out.
It'll be a staggered, there'd be a lot of people unsure of what's going on.
Because the actual rule is 2.5-3 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But how long would it actually? It's got to be close to 10
I've seen blokes take
it's a New York
5
minute.
7
yeah,
minutes.
So have I, yeah.
Okay.
So just a couple of, we have had some nice exchanges in the press box as well. It's good for, you guys both did the Dirk this morning and had a chat with him. Dirk as well, just call him first name. And Chris Rogers then found out that Dirk Nannis had been on the Great Cricketer and immediately subscribed to the podcast so he could listen to it. Didn't listen to his own one or any others. He's like, I just got to hear Dirk Nannis' one. At which point Dirk then said he'd retweet it.
Yeah,
which is great. He said he's not good on Twitter, and then you suggested he goes that he should change his.
He needs to have a separate account so he's not arrogantly doing his own.
Well, so that's what we said. Well, Twitter's great when you just write under a moniker that's not your own name.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. And then you suggested he change his name to Nurk Dannis.
Nurk Dannis,
simple.
Yeah.
So if you do see that come out,
it's going to be 10,000 people following Nurk Dannis tomorrow.
Mm. Okay, well, why don't we move it on to the main part of the show? We've got Jeff Lemon coming in.
Yeah.
We actually spoke to him a little bit earlier, to be honest. One thing I failed to mention when we did talk to him is that he is the editor of a literary journal, Going Down Swinging, which gives him wonderful credibility to do this. So here's Jeff.
Big day? No, big night. I've got to clean up the last 2 wickets, sing the song, do the covers, sing the song, drink 42 beers in the sheds, have a shower, sing the song, publicly objectify my teammates' rigs, compare sizes, tell everyone how good I was when I was 17, go to a strip club, lie to my wife, then spend all of Sunday being an emotionally absent father and husband. Big nights start with great cricket. Lying to yourself has never been harder.
Well, there's very ABC flavour to the Great Cricketer over the last couple of shows, if you'll agree, boys. Heavy. We had Dirk Nannis in yesterday. Well, you guys did. There was Rogers a couple of weeks before that. And it's our distinct pleasure today to have in this whirring Cricket New South Wales boardroom. the voice of our generation, I think, when it comes to cricket writing, Jeff Lemon. Jeff, hello.
The voice of a generation. Hello, Lena Dunham. Maybe I could be a voice of a generation.
And I like that immediately you're going into modern literary references, because we're here today to analyse what everyone's wanted to analyse on the show. I mean, we just get an unprecedented amount of requests to... pardon me, I thought someone was just coming to the room just then. To analyse clubs.
We've been rumbled.
But we're analysing club team songs, because as we all know, there's...
Well, when you win, you need to celebrate, and you celebrate through song, usually. Mm. And every good club worth its salt has a strong club song that they can hang their hat on at the close of play, just before they have the shower together and look into everyone's eyes when naked.
An interesting part of sort of button-down Australian masculine culture, where it's like, don't show your feelings much ever, but we do need to sing.
Yeah.
We do need to celebrate through song.
That's right. It's quite a, I'm quite proud that at least Australian cricket male culture has some ritual attached to it, and it's a really important ritual. And everyone does it differently. Mm. Usually there's nudity. Usually something's being broken. But each song is kind of common for mm-hmm. for one thing. The opposition always think it's shit. So we're actually going to go through...
Shit song.
Shit, that's a shit song.
Say every week. Especially
they beat us by innings, but it's a shit song.
Shit song, yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever heard anybody say, not a bad song?
Yeah, that's a really good song. It's actually got a really good beat.
Yeah.
Excellent harmonies this week.
Yeah.
the key thing when you're actually harmonising a song, because no one actually sings a club song. No. There's no a cappella.
They chant.
They chant it, and it's very barbaric. And there's always... Right. Whacking your bat, or your second bat, or your third bat, if you play for a socially elite club.
Mm.
You whack it against the bin, or against the bench, or against the door.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you leave the door open so the other blokes, the blokes who play for the ship bloke club, which is every club except for yours, they have to hear the song. So then they can say, shit song, isn't it?
Yeah. And in terms of melody, I mean, go no further than, say, the Geelong Football Club in the AFL, basing their song on Toreador from Carmen. Listen to an opera singer performing that, and then listen to, Tom Lonergan belting that out, and there are no notes.
Well, so that's why we've got you on the show, because you're an expert when it comes to kind of analysing the literary form, you know, of song, of poetry.
Dissecting.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because, and maybe our audience will be horrified to learn that some of the songs that we sing are actually deeply rooted in, quite historic culture and quite like highbrow kind of stuff. I'm looking forward to learning more. So we've got two songs today, two team songs that we're going to go through, and they're close to our hearts because they're from two clubs that each of us played at. Shall we name the clubs, or would that be...
Well, the first club we're going to analyse is the North Sydney Bears.
Yes.
I think it's a giveaway because it's in the song.
It's in the song, yeah.
It's pretty unavoidable.
There's no doubt at the end of the song which team is in that song.
It's actually Pakistan's team song, but it starts with North Sydney Bears are coming.
Yeah. So we're going to go stanza for stanza, right? Dave, do you want to take us away for the first stanza of the North Sydney club song? Then we're going to ask Dr. Lemon here, if you will, just for his thoughts and analysis on what it actually means.
Sure. So this is the North Sydney Bears club song. There are four parts to it. It's a verse-chorus structure.
Obviously.
Classic.
Always ask that when I go to a club.
Yep.
North Sydney Bears are coming. North Sydney Bears are here. We all good full of Bob Hope and gallons of pig's ears.
Okay. Now can I...
Jeff,
please quickly analyse this.
What strikes me at first is the temporal confusion. North Sydney Bears are coming.
Said that.
Yeah. North Sydney Bears are here. Which is it? Are they coming?
It'll be both.
Are they here?
Yeah.
So have they lost face at the beginning of the song by doing that?
Or at least lost the reader? I just think they don't necessarily know where they are. That's true.
That's very true, yeah. Usually true. Percy's.
Were they about to arrive and they thought they should probably send a text earlier, even though they'd be there in a couple of minutes? They're like, I'm late enough that someone will probably be cracking the shit, so I'm going to get the sort of early apology texting just to smooth the late arrival.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Or you send a text that says, I'll be there in 2 minutes when you know you'll be there in 10 because you know that buys you a few more minutes of goodwill.
Yeah.
Were they already here and they forgot to tell you they were coming, but then they've arrived and now they're outside texting saying, well, we're on the way. They know they'll ring the bell in 30
seconds. These folks don't have mobile phones.
Where are the Bears? Where are the Bears? That's what I want to know in that first sentence. I also want to know what Bob Hope has to do with this.
So there they say, we all good full of Bob Hope.
And that's deliberate. You might think grammatically, we all good full of Bob Hope is wrong, but it's quite deliberate. Bob Hope is the traditional rhyming slang for dope, which too is marijuana. I mean, that's
partake in a recreational.
It's interesting.
Substance.
I didn't realise there was a big crossover between sort of 420 culture and club cricket.
No.
As it
Coachella,
hollowing out the bat handle and turning it into a kind of shaman
cricket
piece.
The important thing with drugs and cricket is you've got to be taking the right kind of drugs.
Yes.
And like perhaps when you guys were playing a few years ago, the right kind of drugs were marijuana, but actually there's been a shift in culture.
Really?
And now, like, you're looking at your heavier methamphetamines, cocaine.
Uppers.
Whereas now marijuana is the outsider's drug, and now it's the wrong kind of drug.
Yeah, okay. So, again, North's behind the eight ball.
I need to update there.
So marijuana's...
Well, not literally behind the eight ball, because that's a different situation.
Yeah, pardon me. Wrong.
So marijuana is a sort of a weak drug.
Yeah, it's like weak.
It's weak.
You can't get your chest out and dominate with marijuana.
You can't get the biceps pumping. You can't be Steve O'Keefe taking a week last year just doing the glow stick dance.
Yeah, that's right. He ain't full of Bob Hope or good
flow. Okay, interesting.
And gallons of pig's ears.
Yeah, that also... I mean, there are a lot of things that stand out to me. We all good.
So we're still at the third line.
We all good. That sounds to me like... we were mentioning this earlier. It's kind of hip hop.
Yeah.
Style, it's street. Grammatical style. We all good. Yeah. We all good for the pop-up.
Tribe Called Quest. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe that I'm getting. And then they're going with Pig's Ears, which is definitely Cockney rhyming slang.
Yeah.
So there's an interesting cultural mash.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're in an overlapping, you know, dissolving shores. The boundaries between cultures are starting to become permeable. Is this just a sign of modern contemporary multicultural Australia?
Yeah.
That's what I thought when I first heard it.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, I think it's actually interesting because North Sydney is actually club representative. It means it's a very affluent area of Sydney.
Right.
But all people who play for that club think they're in the Hilltop Hoods. So this just feels like very much...
Yeah,
since the bloke who didn't play at that club.
So it is a very homogenous kind of culture at North, but what we're learning, I suppose, through its song is that it wants to create more of a cultural match. I think maybe it is a bit more progressive.
But the fact that they're using gallons, now, does that tap into, say, a West Coast US culture thing where they're still on the imperial system?
Yeah.
Or is that more like a sort of late 50s Australiana where it hasn't actually evolved since that time and the old blokes at the club who actually once used gallons, you know, and they're like, that'll be £4.
Yes.
12 shillings
yeah.
For that gallon of pig's ears, my good boy. Yeah. Where are these cultural influences coming from? I want to know sort of the provenance of this song. To
well, everywhere.
I want to know if there's ever been a conversation like this in the Cricket New South Wales boardroom where they kind of pick Steve Waugh as well.
Well, let's move on to the second verse, or I think it's the chorus that it's meant to be. We're the doyens of our nation, better drunks you'll never see. We're a bunch of total desperates. We're the bears of North Sydney.
Yeah, and interesting that you put that stress there on the
accent.
That's
on
what's really awkward
syllable.
In the last line because so Sydney. So the word Sydney. Yeah. That's what you'd refer to poetically as an iambic foot. As a trochaic foot. So you have an iam has an unstressed syllable followed by a stressed syllable.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a trochaic has a stressed syllable followed by an unstressed
syllable. Fascinating.
So if I say, most of our place names, Australian culture tends to go with the hard stress first. It'll sit them.
Yes. Do everything hard.
Yeah.
Melbourne, Adelaide, Sydney, Brisbane. You
always
know,
hard.
We know the fuck about.
Yeah.
Go hard at the start, fail off at the end.
That's right.
That's the Australian.
Set
the
air foot on the throat early.
Water.
Dominate.
Yeah. Whereas, say, a word like performance has the stress is on the second syllable. So if you started a line somehow with that word, which you might if you're in a sort of KPI achieving sort of club, you know, we're all about processes and the structure. So, then you might have performance in your team song. I don't know. But it's interesting that they've got that that structure and then they've totally fucked it up by putting it at the end of the line because it's Sydney. You have to rhyme never see with North Sydney.
Yeah.
Now, you know, whereas you could... Maybe you should try ending it with bears because that's a single syllable. You can kind of leave that where, you know, better drunks are on your stairs.
Yeah.
We're a bunch of total desperates from North Sydney where the bears.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's complex, though.
Again.
I'm just imagining a bloke hitting a bin to that. That's very difficult for him to maintain.
Well, wait till we get to the Gordon song because there's some strange rhythms to that. Shall we move along? Let's move to the third one. Can I just read this one out?
Yeah. Well, this is your favourite verse.
This is my favourite verse, having played at the club as well. So this is for you, Jeff. Just what are your thoughts? We have a reputation for making lots of noise, for cooting any sort of map, not tolerating toys.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
Any questions, or is that just pretty straight up?
That's probably obvious.
Unless it's a sort of abbreviation to do with Crash Bandicoot. Can you explain cooting, the concept
well,
of
word
cooting?
Can't because it's got a little squiggly line under it.
Yeah, that's
it's rhyming slang.
Presuming it's a verb, I coot, you coot,
yep.
He coots.
It's rhyming slang for
a famous rugby league player from the sort of 60s and 70s who played for Souths called Ron Coote.
Used gallons.
Yeah, that's right. So this is the gallons
era. Operated in gallons.
But yeah, Ron Coote, famous South Sydney player. So cooting is now rhyming slang for rooting.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. And map is just obviously female genitalia.
Right.
Yeah, obviously.
Obviously,
yeah.
because Australian men.
So it's one of those really nice, inclusive sort of lines to have in a song.
Well, it's a song for the family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a song for saying this is a bunch of sad men in a room who are sure that no one outside the room will ever come in and no one will ever know what has happened. Yeah. It's a secret shame.
Men rejoicing in their own company with their wives at home waiting for them to hopefully come home tonight.
Yeah, or hopefully not.
Or not.
Okay, so it's definitely that beautiful sort of socially progressive, like... You know, we're not just a bunch of cavemen. Away we are, kind of thing. All right.
Can I ask?
Coaching any sort of map, not tolerating.
Sorry, you were talking.
No,
it's your
please,
show.
Please.
I just wanted to ask, just the part at the start of that stanza where it says, we have a reputation for making lots of noise. Now, as a player of the club, I'm not sure whether that's a reputation that Norths are trying to imbue on others by just saying we have one. It kind of implies that the reputation already exists as a result of others. It
should precede you. You shouldn't have to say that we make lots of noise explicitly in your club song.
Exactly.
I think any time a person or organisation tells you what sort of reputation they have, they probably don't have it.
So they're probably not cooting maps.
I would guess that probably the cooting rate is a lot lower than the song would make you believe.
So it's like a pre-season when the coach is running you through the culture that we have at this club in a PowerPoint, but you don't even know about it yet because he's just made it up.
But if there's one thing that Australian manhood is about, it's exaggerating cooting-related activities.
Yes, I've always said that.
Yeah, I mean, as have we all. Not tolerating toys. Now, does that mean sex toys?
Norths will obviously have a right of reply to this. We talk to great clubs through this podcast all the time. If anyone from the North Sydney Bears wants to reply explaining the meaning of the song, please feel free. You know where to get in touch,
maybe,
I'm not sure.
Maybe if your cooting-related activities are like pretty standard, pretty down the line, you don't like to involve external paraphernalia, you don't you know, you don't want to go to Sexpo, you don't want to sort of expand your horizons, maybe get into a bit of pegging. You know, there are various lines that you can go down with.
Traditional.
You know, they're like, no, just you and me. You know, that's all I need.
And we don't tolerate anything otherwise.
We're not getting any toys involved. Or are we back to this sort of hip-hop blend in where we're saying, I mean, so if you're talking Hilltop Hoods, for instance, you know, you've got more toys in a small kid's bedroom. Is a line from Pressure MC. From
that's
for
right.
instance, I'm talking about the hip-hop scene locally in Australia.
In North Sydney.
A toy in Sydney, in Australian rap or in most rap culture is a rapper who's not very good. They're a pretender. They're a faker. And then that's probably been expanded culturally to take in other areas. So, for instance, if you were someone who was not actually good at consuming gallons of pig's ears and lots of Bob Hope, maybe you would be a toy as far as pig's ears go.
Jeff, as a connoisseur of the local Australian hip-hop scene, given that the Hilltop Hoods came about after this song was written, is it possible that Suffer and Pressure were borrowing from the North Sydney team song, Bevan White, etc.?
Maybe they wrote
the
song. I mean, it's entirely possible. It's a less complex rhyme scheme, I'm going to tell you that, than some of those that Suffer and Pressure have used in their work.
We'll get on. We'll move on from North Sydney to Gordon, which is the second club song we'll be analysing. He goes, you're an absolute stalwart of that club, and Sam and I, we spent a bit of time there as well. It's arguably a different structure and maybe a more sophisticated structure. You can certainly tell us a little bit about it. I'll start with the first couple of lines. We're proud to be part of the Gordon CC. We're fond of Bacardi and a schooner or three. We play all our cricket in true Gordon style, trying always to win by a proverbial mile.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
It's a little bit like the night before Christmas. You know, towards the night before Christmas and all through the house.
Oh, yes.
Not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse.
Completely baited that song down. There's nothing cool about it anymore.
Yes. What they're doing here is, so that's an anapestic meter.
You've played at the club.
But I mean, you would, obviously it's in the handbook when you join up. But interestingly, the anapest, serial anapest.
That's a literary
that
joke.
Like a literary joke, joke. Yeah.
It's literary / Peter Hoare crossover. There's a small Venn diagram.
And you're in it.
I'm right in the middle of it. I'm in the thick of quite a number of those. Interestingly, the first syllable of the line, though, is implied, so we don't actually have two beats at the start of the line. So we're proud. The first stress syllable is on the second syllable of the line.
That's true when you hear it in person as well.
We're proud to be part of the Gordon CC.
That's exactly how it goes.
Two unstressed and one stressed.
One twice.
Yeah, we're fond of Bacardi and a schooner or
three.
We're playing all our cricket in true Gordon style, trying always to win by. We just fucked up the meter because we put A in there.
Well, he goes, you can explain that sentence and how it's performed.
Well, I'm not going to do an a cappella version, but I mean, my big takeaway from the song, singing that song, is that I had a bad experience in Bacardi when I was like 15. For me, it's now like.
Is that the Bacardi Festival? When you were 15.
It actually wasn't that, but I should have gone to that year. So therefore, I can't actually like drink it anymore. So I would never have a Bacardi. Schooner or three, sure. Bacardi, no. So that's why I thought about changing clubs.
Right. So it wasn't a sponsorship thing as well from Bacardi, in a way that perhaps Warner enjoys a good relationship with Toyota when he scores 100.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon don't have a relationship with Bacardi.
No sponsorship, just with the local pub. We get 10% off premium. Draft beers, domestic only.
But no Bacardi discount.
No Bacardi discount.
So that's a good win for them.
We are for even having it in the song. Now, as far as I know, most uses of Bacardi in popular culture are used in songs so that you can then rhyme it with the word party at some other point.
Sure. Yes.
Disappointing to see Gordon's haven't used party in any Bacardi related way.
It's a missed opportunity.
Because Gordon always say soiree instead of
party. I wonder if they just used Bacardi because it worked rhythmically. You know, they tried a bunch of other. I mean, Campari could have worked.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Yeah,
a Campari or three.
Yeah, Campari.
A Pim's juggle set.
And a schooner or three of pink grapefruit.
It's probably an indicator in when this was written, isn't it?
Yeah.
When Bacardi was at its peak.
Right.
Almost definitely.
Yeah, okay. And Jägermeister didn't fit. But I'm interested. I mean, rhythmically, it would work if you're trying always to win by proverbial miles. That would be a better structural fit.
So,
but what's the A doing in there? The indefinite article. What's happening there?
Rhetorical question, I suppose.
Yeah, certainly can't answer that from a literary perspective.
Not here.
But we'll keep moving along.
Yep.
So
brilliant analysis.
He goes, do you want to bring it home from We'll Take On?
So then it goes on and says, we'll take on the district's Waitara away, then off to Merriweather at the finish of play. And then at this point, you insert the names of people who've done well on the song. So I'll just use an example here. So I say, there's Edo's and Pez and Little Lemon.
Yeah, put a little in front.
That's a champing related.
Yeah. It's great to be Gordon down old Chatswood Way.
So ideally you need someone whose name ends in A at that point.
Yeah.
Just for the rhyming.
Sure, sure. Then it says...
Oh, not necessarily, he goes. I mean, you've sung the song. Do you not necessarily need someone ending with A?
No, you don't always need to.
Ideally
you're trying to like...
For purity you'd want it.
Yeah.
There's Pino and What's It and Little JK. It's great to be Gordon down old Chatswood.
Right.
Ideally. So that's kind of your vote scenario. That's your 3-2-1 is who gets in the song.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And so is the little
one... That's
quite
clever.
The like 1 point out of 3-2-1 or...
Not necessarily.
Again, that's quite
how it fits in. What I always used to do is I always used to sing my own name 3 times.
Oh, so everyone just starts chanting their own name to see if they
No one else did that, but I always did it.
Okay.
It made everyone look at me, and it made me feel really good because I didn't perform well enough to actually get my name in the song.
Okay.
That was the only way to actually do it.
When you did that and turned around, did you appear in the mirror and stab yourself?
Why was I always naked?
Yeah.
And then the song, we'll skip to the end, but the song finishes, a Gordon for me, a Gordon for me.
Oh, you've missed the other
If you're not a Gordon, you're no use to me.
Oh.
The Ramwicks are braw, and then you say the opposition's name, the Bears
O's.
And all, but a cocky wig Gordon's the pride of them all. Up, Gordon, get far, you bar.
Does that mean get fucked, you bar?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
All right.
What else would it mean?
Well, I mean, I assume so. What is a cocky? But a cocky wee Gordon.
Gordon's got a history in Scottish heritage, so I think it's
the Stags.
Yeah, Stags, and there's some Highlander chat there.
So it makes more sense if you do it in the right accent. You've all got to sing it like this.
That'd be good.
A Gordon for me, a cocky wee Gordon's the pride of them all.
Oh, you've been to the club.
That sounds so much better.
Yeah,
maybe they'll take me back.
Right, okay, so with the Randwicks are braw. This is very old Lang Syne kind of stuff. I don't really know.
I have been told the history of the song, actually, but I tuned out because,
So Robbie Burns wrote this one and Hilltop Hoods wrote the other one.
Yeah.
So it's a rich and varied cultural history.
Yeah.
And then there's that little verse in the middle. We've even got members from most other states and all will agree that we treat them as mates.
See, that's untrue because anyone from any other state is obviously
relentlessly. Yeah.
Well, that's actually not in the song. That's actually not performed in the song, but it's on the Gordon website.
Oh, okay.
So they're just paying lip service to their inclusiveness when in reality,
anyone
from anywhere else is somewhat scary.
I mean, should we finish up with having a broader conversation about these club songs, about what... these are just two examples of clubs
this
that
is my
play
question
at,
for Jeff, because I know Jeff's got to head off in a second to actually cover the cricket that's being played.
Yeah, go back to his job.
Yeah. So, Jeff, just with both those songs considered, do you have a broad view of what each club would be like based on the song?
I'm guessing the second club's more pretentious.
Yep.
And it may be the first club's less. I mean, when you literally say in your song, "We are a bunch of total desperates,"
it's quite self-deprecating.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an endorsement. You know, it doesn't speak of an inherent sort of self-confidence or worth.
When I was weighing up the clubs that I was thinking of going to, I just looked at the website, saw the club song, and went there.
This is the kind of place where I can blend in. Whereas the other one's all about pride. You know, it's all about belonging. Yeah. It's all about identity. It's about history, heritage, which I suppose you're destroying by just going club to club.
It's about white privilege.
It's Trump.
It's Trump.
It's so much
Trump
in grade cricket, isn't
it? What's in his head.
So if you had to choose one, which would it be?
Just on metrical precision, I'd go with the Gordon song.
Okay.
I am fond of a cap. I'm going to lie. I've been there. Some nights you think, I need to get myself in a state where I'm going to punch a wall. You know, that just gets the job done.
Yeah.
A remarkably quick rate.
Well, thanks, German.
German.
German. Thanks, Germans.
Thanks,
Germans. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Germany.
I can just see that, you know, just sort of Churchill, late 1945, with a caption just looking over the face of London.
I think six people tried to speak then.
Yeah, it's always the way on the great cricket. No, absolute pleasure having you on, Jeff. Thank you for your time, German. Sorry.
If Churchill had Twitter, that's what he would have posted.
Yeah. Thanks, Germany. you know, if anyone else got a club song they want to sing in for some analysis, then please do.
Sing it back to me as Maloko.
Bring it
back. We great cricketers work hard. Everything has to be hard at all times. Work hard. Circuit hard. Just be hard. Never smart. Always hard.
Boys, this third and final segment is the Ask TGC segment, where we take your questions.
Well enunciated.
You being the listeners, you can catch us with the hashtag AskTGC and ask us anything about cricket. Get us on Twitter. Get us on Facebook.
I prefer life questions.
Cricket is life.
Cricket is life.
Mm. Yeah, we'll start with cricket, but honestly, you can put anything. Just put that hashtag in and ask us literally anything.
Yeah.
Literally anything. Mm. This first one comes from Jack McCauley. And it refers to a Boxing Day backyard cricket fixture that he was involved in, and umpiring. Mm-hmm. He says, while umpiring, my uncle on my dad's side man-catted my dad without giving him a warning, which I ruled not out. Did I do the right thing by showing loyalty to my dad, who was playing a crucial Michael Bevan-esque role in his side's run chase, or did I miss a great opportunity to alpha him by giving him out and forcing him to head back to the veranda and help my mum score?
Yeah. Okay. The thing that stuck with me, which is just a little bit kind of fringe of the whole thing, is why he had to say that it was his uncle on his dad's side. I was like, well, where does the mum come into play there?
Yeah, specific,
like,
yeah.
There's some,
his mum's from Argentina, so the whole side of the family's over there.
Yeah, that's what...
In Buenos Aires,
I was just really focused on that and I didn't even listen to the rest.
So basically what happened is, and like, fair enough, that was a distracting element of the question. So, his uncle on his dad's side. His uncle. This bloke's uncle.
This bloke's uncle.
Man-catted his dad.
Yeah.
So, Jack's dad was man-catted by his uncle.
Yeah.
Obvious conflict of interest there.
Mm.
He ruled not out.
Mm.
So, dad got man-catted by my uncle. It's not out. Even though he's out under the rules of the law. Rules of the law. Rules of the law.
Yeah.
So, he showed loyalty to his dad.
Yeah. Okay. Should he have done that?
So, should he have done that or not? Or... did he miss a great opportunity to alpha him by giving him out and forcing him to head back to the veranda and help my mum score?
Yeah, definitely, because cricket is a law-based game. And if you're encroaching over the crease, you're getting an advantage that you don't need. I mean, I'd like to know why he might have sided with his dad. You know, is the uncle an older uncle? Has he been withdrawing money from his dad?
Yeah.
Has he been embezzling money, you know, from the family, if that's possible?
Yeah, family
and
business.
If there are family business issues, then perhaps I would understand.
Have you ever been man-cat? I've been man-catted in a real representative cricket game.
Wow.
And given out.
How did that go down?
Okay, so your reaction to this is quite interesting with some personal experience.
Knee-jerk and based in fear,
Oh, how old were you?
12.
That's got to be
brutal.
I was on 70-odd.
Wow.
Never hit a ton at that point.
70-odd, so 60.
70-odd, I was 37. Yeah. And I was man-catted. I was on 70. I was going to hit 100.
Yes.
I'm a kid in the under 12 rep team,
yeah,
about to hit his first 100.
Yeah.
Really coming into my own.
Mm.
Yeah.
And
up until that point, it's the best thing you've done in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they all appealed. And the umpire gave me, and I went, and it was up to the captain of the opposition team, and it was basically, it was like the emperor who like either thumbs up or thumbs down.
What were you doing at this point, just to slow it down? Like, did you like start kind of getting on your knees and going, please,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
spare me, have mercy?
I'm Russell Crowe, Gladiator,
yeah,
just there on my knees,
yeah,
please spare me,
yeah,
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
but then he goes, no, thumbs down, and I walk back to the pavilion, and then after, during the break, I see the dad and his son having a stern talking to. And the dad wasn't happy with his son for that.
Did that give you any? It's kind of like a victim statement,
yeah,
being read out. Did it give you any kind of justice being served,
well,
at all? Or?
People kept telling me that, you know, the dad's not happy with his son. So I felt good that his family dynamic was being disturbed by this whole thing.
Yeah.
Even if my dreams are being crushed in the process.
Well, at the very least, your dreams were crushed, but he lost his relationship with his dad.
Yeah, exactly.
What's worse?
Yeah.
And he never played cricket again, obviously.
Yeah.
So that ruined his
he had to move out. He was 12.
can I ask, and you may or may not want to admit this on air, but like, because I know what would have happened if it were me, but given out Mancat at that point in time, like, did you immediately burst into tears?
I cried on the walk back to the pavilion. But
like, how long was the type of crying?
Like, it wasn't blubbering, like, tears strewn down the face.
No,
but it was like welling up,
bellowing,
visibly,
yeah,
visible welling of the eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
eyes.
Also, I'm a young man coming into puberty. I can't show any kind of emotion whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It would have manifested just a single tear.
A single tear.
It's rolling down your eye now.
Like, yeah. Surely this is like the umpire. Like, the umpire is putting a whole lot of responsibility on a young 12-year-old's,
yeah,
shoulders.
Yeah.
Like, that umpire is a coward.
Yeah.
Like, just.
But that kid's never felt that much power since then.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
No. This is the manager of Officeworks.
Yeah.
But
always
a lot of
so many great cricketers at Officeworks. So with that said, Dave,
yeah,
what do you think listeners should have done?
Look, I like the fact that any Mancat is given not out. I don't think it's in the spirit of the game.
Yeah,
you should at least get a warning, and especially
on
Boxing Day,
yeah,
with your family.
Yeah.
Oh, you should think that.
One warning.
I just think that.
I think it's
funny. So you'd ruthlessly man-cat anyone on Boxing Day.
So I think it's funny.
Oh, you call it ruthless, I call it applying the law.
I find it funny.
But does the law apply in backyard cricket?
Well, that's a great question. Is that,
yeah,
there's an essay,
yeah,
on that. I've changed my view on man-catting, though,
because
I just
there's an electric wiki in backyard cricket. There is a lot in real life.
that's a good one. Anyway, he goes, sorry if... sort of common.
Oh, no, I was just
going
to say,
strength.
I think in the backyard setting, I think it's funny to man-cat someone,
yeah,
or like to throw a tennis ball at someone's head.
Yeah.
You know, but if you do that in real life, that's obviously,
yeah,
frowned upon, particularly,
yeah,
the bit where you throw a tennis ball at someone's head.
Yeah.
So I think in backyard setting, man-cat,
yeah,
funny.
Man-cat,
yeah,
away.
And
funny.
Point to laugh.
Yeah.
Until the uncle cries.
Yeah. Okay. Well done.
This one comes from David Howard on the Twitter machine. He says, use the hashtag AskTGC. Can Sydney ever host a day-night test with a pink ball and pink everywhere else in the grounds? Now, I know that's not a funny question, but I thought that's actually a very interesting point. Like a pink ball, like the Combank advertisements behind the bowler's arm is all in pink. Everything's in pink. Everyone wears pink on the third day. That's tomorrow. So I thought it was an interesting question. Could that ever happen? Could Sydney ever have a day-night test?
Yeah. I mean, people have been complaining, you know, batsmen have been complaining about the pink ball enough, haven't they? I mean, imagine the whinging that would go on if they did it at the SCG on,
yeah,
day three.
Yeah.
Are you saying that the players have to wear pink as well? Or is this just a pink ball test? Because you
ball
said
test.
That everyone was wearing pink.
Well, everyone in the crowd. Everyone in the crowd wears pink, don't they?
I thought it was like, you were talking about, you know, when the West Indies in the 70s had to wear pink one-day shirts, and they thought that was an affront to their masculinity,
yeah,
and whether,
yeah,
that would happen today.
But didn't they look good, that West Indies team, with the pink and that, like, hot,
yeah,
pink? It looks so good.
They weren't happy with it, though.
They weren't happy with it, no.
That was Kerry Packer offering them.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure it would become some sort of news item, though.
Hmm.
You wouldn't really want to be James Sutherland talking to Glenn McGrath going, sorry, we can't raise money for this wonderful foundation because corporate dollars,
mm-hmm,
day-night test, sorry,
mm-hmm,
get out, new charity.
Robert Ryan, at Robert Ryan 27, comes in on Twitter and he says, in under-14s, we bowled the side out for 12, all of which were ducks. As the off-spinner, can I continue to revel in the seamer's glory, asked TGC. And he's shown me a picture from The Courier, the newspaper The Courier, on Tuesday, October 28, 2003. Headline is Amazing Cricket, Team All Out for 12, 10 ducks. So there's 12 extras, which,
yeah,
is my big,
right,
takeaway for some reason.
Yeah.
Not that there were 10 ducks, but,
yeah,
the extras.
Where's the 12 come from?
Where's the 12 come,
yeah,
from?
Yeah, that was my immediate
Were
thought.
There buys?
Mm.
Yeah. So the keeper can't ever talk about this then. Yeah. Blood on his hands. So this guy wants to know whether he can revel in the team's glory and the seamer's glory,
yeah,
even though he's a lowly off-spinner who played no part in that 12.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Can he do that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I could imagine him standing there with a beer or whatever saying, like, oh, yeah, we bowled a team out for 12 once.
Mm.
And people have made the connection, oh, you're an off-spinner, okay.
But
someone, what do you say then when someone goes, oh, how many did you get?
I think it's implied that he played no part in it unless you open the bowling, because clearly the first two blokes have just taken all the wickets because they got out for zero.
Well, that's true. It was
it's not like he came in on the 40th over and just ripped through them.
Yeah,
it depends who he's talking to. Like, what if he's talking to, he's taking his uncle out who doesn't like the cricket because he wants to ask him for a loan or something, you know, down the track. You know, and then he's, oh, we've got a team. He's trying to show his wares. Yeah. You know, he's like, oh, we've got a team out for 12 once. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay, so he can succeed and do things with resources.
That's good, yeah.
And that, but yeah, the uncle goes, oh, did you take any wickets
Robert's
yourself?
Obviously got a photo.
I was part of it.
You're out of the trust.
Yeah.
Robert's obviously got a photo of the head of the newspaper, front page newspaper, on his phone because he's tweeted it to us.
He's definitely kept that in a scrapbook.
So he's kept that in a scrapbook, yeah. It's probably a screensaver on his phone, if I had to guess, and all through his LinkedIn. So his question is, can he continue to revel in Seamer's glory? He has, and he will continue to do so.
Mm.
I think it's a fair bet.
Should we go one more question, or do you think that'll wrap us up?
Nah, that'll do.
That'll do. Okay, we've still got 3 more days of podcast, provided the match goes that long.
And keep the questions coming.
Mm.
More of them, please. More of that.
And anything ground related, if you want us to do anything, if you want us to talk to the Richies or something, can't guarantee it. Got to be outside the ground. But let us know. Ask TGC via DMs.
See you tomorrow. Day 3, Jane McGrath Day. Wear something pink if you're coming to the ground. Get in contact with us. You know how to do that. See you tomorrow.
Cheers.